Welcome to the Casual Author Podcast. I'm Dan, sci-fi and fantasy author, father of six, full-time worker, homesteader, as well as a man of many other responsibilities. I'm here to bring you inspiration and positivity around having a busy life and wanting to chase that author career, even if you have to take a casual approach. For more information about me, my books, and the podcast, head to dankenner.com/podcast. And here's the show. Hey there, it's Dan Kenner with The Casual Author. Today is Monday, April 15th, 2024, as I record this. And this is episode number 115 of the podcast. Today we're talking to John McBrien about the importance of structure in your writing and in the formatting of your book. John is very, very passionate about formatting, and he has a lot of insight into why, not only as a writer, we should be so focused on structure, but also for the reader as well, how it can really affect their ability to read. Now, this is an interesting conversation for someone who does not operate off of lots of non-intuitive structure. I say non-intuitive because my books have structure. It comes from an intuitive place as opposed to a pre-planned place. But anyway, so it's a very insightful conversation. I think you're going to want to stick around for that. So before we get into that, let's go ahead and start with the homestead updates, because I feel like those are the easiest to remember right on the forefront. This last week, we spent time making sure that all the kidding pens were prepared. We did a little bit of that the week before. I talked about it, but also we had to shave their udders, and we had to make sure that they had all their hooves clipped and everything. So we try to clip their hooves on a regular basis, you know, every month or two, because they tend to, like fingernails, right? They'll grow and they'll kind of curl under their hooves, which can be a problem, particularly now that things are drying out. It's warming up, so everything's drying out. Any manure that has gone stuck inside those hoof overgrowths can rot. Now, we don't have that problem, clearly, because we're cutting them regularly. But that's what happens if you don't. It'll grow over. Now, you may think, well, what about mountain goats, right? They don't have someone clipping their hooves. The reason that you don't have to do that for wild goats is because they kind of manage it themselves. They're running around, you know, scuffing their hooves on rocks and shaving them down. Our goats will do that in the summer sometimes, so I don't usually have to cut them too much in the summer. In the winter, when there's a lot of snow, they're a little bit lazier too, because there's not a lot to do. They just kind of stay in their houses and eat. But yeah, you just have to cut them to make sure that they don't get hoof rot or anything. So we did that, and then the shaving the udders is from an entirely practical standpoint, because they're all about to have their babies in the next week or two. It's hard to say for sure. Our first one is due this week. And, you know, there's a lot of fluids that come with kids coming, goat kids. So we don't have to get into all the details, but you can imagine it's definitely not the cleanest thing in the world. Regardless, we want to clear that up so that it's not so messy, for one. And two, we don't really want a lot of hair in our milk. So we will start milking them, not immediately. We're not planning on bottle feeding. That's a whole nother decision. We've thought about bottle feeding before, but it's just a lot of work to have to go bottle feed all of the babies. And it's nice to have a fallback if you get sick or you need to go on a little vacation or something, just to let the babies have all the milk. So, you know, for a while, for I want to say 8 to 10 weeks, the babies will have all the milk. We won't take any of it. And then we'll separate them at night once they get big enough that they don't need it at night. And then we'll just have it in the morning and they can have it during the day. So that's the plan. But shaving the udders makes sure that we don't get lots of hair in the milk. We do filter it, so even if there is some hair that gets in, it'll get filtered out. But I can tell you it's so much easier to filter milk when there's not copious amounts of hair in it. So that's what we did this last weekend, and they behaved for the most part. We only had one goat that was very wary of it. And, you know, once we got her on the stand, she remembered, oh, this is what I'm used to. This is where I come to get milk, and she was totally cool with it. But at first, she was like, what are we doing? And it was primarily because her daughter was panicking. We have her daughter with us as well. She's just such a pretty goat. We had to keep her. It is one of those situations where the mom is completely black coat. The father has little patches of white, but he's mostly brown and black. But their baby is almost entirely white. She's very beautiful. In any case, because the baby was kind of panicking, she was getting a little protective and panicky. But anyway, it all turned out good. They're all prepared for kidding. Hopefully this year is a lot smoother than last year. I think it will be. But based on how wide their bellies are, I anticipate that we've got at least two or three in all of them. So should be fun. I'll make sure to get pictures of them when they're born, minus all of the birthing stuff. Only the cute baby kids. That's all you need to see. Let's see, other than that, yeah, Homestead is going very, very well. We're drowning in eggs as usual. We actually did a recounting of this time last year. We weren't getting a lot of eggs last year. Last year, the high egg count week we had was about 62. Our high egg count was just last week, this year, and we got 152 eggs in 1 week. So you can imagine we're trying to figure out the best way to store them. Probably making more egg noodles to dehydrate, and then you can just rehydrate them like normal pasta. We're doing a lot of that. We have a bunch of water glassed eggs. So now we have three buckets each with six dozen of water glassed eggs that are shelf stable. So we need to buy more buckets so that we can water glass more. This is great. Last year we only got three buckets of water glassed eggs. This year, who knows, maybe we'll get four or five, six. I don't know. We'll have a lot of those eggs stored for the winter. So a very positive thing, but definitely 62 high week versus 150. You can imagine it's quite different. Let's see, other than that, no other homestead updates in terms of my authoring. So I'm making progress on Dwarf Blood, which is the third book of the Hidden Heritage series. This is a YA portal fantasy series. Really enjoying it so far. Just shy of 43,000 words, which is great. It feels like it's going really, really fast. But at the same time, I think about this is so ironic for someone who Discovery writes all their books. I feel like there's still so much of the story in this book that I need to get through. And I'm already just under halfway through. If I'm getting around 108, 110,000 like the other two books, then yeah, there's a lot that needs to happen. But no, I'm really enjoying it. I love this main character. I think, I don't know if it's my favorite of the three I've written so far, but she's definitely way more complex, and I'm having a lot of fun with that. As a result of an interview that I had with, you'll hear at the end of this, it's not this interview, but it's the one following. Talk about creativity with an author. I have decided to try making my own book covers. So I know some of you may be thinking that's a skill that I don't have. Not me in general, just you perhaps listening. And it's true, I don't have the skill of making my own book covers yet. But talking to this author who previously did not have skill making covers, and then learning about her experience, I'd like to give it a try. Now, worst case scenario, I can always pay someone to make my covers. There's always a fallback. But in considering the costs analysis of all of the books, some of the biggest cost factors of publishing books are book covers, which, of course, you want to make sure you have good book covers. So I'm just doing a lot of studying. I'm practicing. I'm learning, just making, dabbling in covers. I don't anticipate that I'm going to be able to make one in 10 minutes. No, I don't have any expectation like that. But I'd like to upskill myself so that I could comfortably make my own covers in the future. And, you know, it's actually proving better than I expected to be. I don't say easy, it's definitely not easy, but better in that I'm moving in the right direction. I've created a few samples for Dragon Blooded. First, my wife was like, no, that's a no-go. And, you know, I made some modifications. She said, okay, that's better, but still no-go on these fronts. So, in any case, worst case scenario, the power of being able to make your own book cover comes from a few different facets. One, it's not that big of a deal if I have to change it in the future, right? If I have learned the skill of making my own covers, then if one fails or doesn't sell successfully, it's not a big deal. I can just make a new one. I can try something else. I can take a different route. I can tweak it in my own way. I have the power to do that without having to pay someone else to do it, right? So missing the mark is not as big of a deal when you don't have to pay someone to fix it. So there's one. Two, I can test things a little bit better, right? It's not as financially worth it to purchase multiple covers or multiple art pieces from someone just to test them to see, hey, which cover might perform a little bit better. If I can do that myself, then I can create a bunch of different images and test them on either my email audience, people who subscribe to my email list, just ask them their preference, or, you know, run cheap ads, Facebook, Amazon, see which ones click. Maybe not Amazon, but Facebook, Instagram. See which ones get more clicks, and see how people react to that. So I like to give it a try. I won't be discouraged if it doesn't work out super well, but I'm enjoying the process so far, despite my color blindness. So I'm trying to find ways to account for the color blindness. using hex codes versus color names, that only helps a little bit. But also the color dropper, trying to find colors in the image that kind of match when I'm creating text. It doesn't work. It's not foolproof, but it's better than me trying to off-base pick something from the rainbow palette, which I can't see most of the colors on that palette. In any case, I'm trying to work around that, and it's been kind of fun. It's been a fun experience, but we'll see what happens. Worst case, I will get marketing images off of them that I can then use for future marketing. So some of you may be thinking, do you know how to draw? No, I do not. I'm talking about stock image photos. A lot of, I don't know that I'm gonna take the leap to drawing photos or drawing images yet. That's a little bit more of an upskill. But stock photo sites, combining images, trying to create covers, a feel for the book using stock photos is something that I feel like I might be able to do. So we're giving that a go. Most of what I've come up with is from stock images. So, like I said, I'm just enjoying the process. Worst case, at least I'm having fun. That being said, we'll see what happens. If I do come up with a viable cover, then perhaps I'll share it with you, or I'll send it to my email list. If you'd like to see those, definitely join that. But I don't believe I have any other updates. We can go ahead and shift over to the interview portion with John. Hey, John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, thank you for joining me. I'm excited to pick your brain about various things around design and structure and organization, because that is definitely not my forte, but sounds like it is yours. Before we get into that fun stuff, though, how long have you been writing and publishing?
So I was thinking about how I was going to answer this question, and I will answer it basically when I started coming up with the very first germ of ideas for what would seriously become my first release. And that was roughly around 2018. Of course, like many writers, and ever since I was a kid, I was writing stuff. That's the typical tale. And I guess not for everybody, but most of the time, most authors will say, like, even when I was a child, I just knew I wanted to create stories and things like that. Same thing here, of course. Of course, when I was a little kid, I thought I was going to draw comic books for a living. And as much as I love to draw, comic books are hard. They're hard to draw. And so around 2018, and this is an interesting time in my life when I first started to take this whole writing thing a bit more seriously. That was the year that I decided I was going to go to design school for graphic design, take that more seriously too. And we found out my wife is pregnant. So, the busiest my life was going to get, I decided, hey, I'm also going to start writing a book as well. Put that right on top of it. So, so a bit of a milestone there. I didn't realize how many things in my life changed up until that point. And the reason I decided to answer this, when I consistently started, with notes, outlines, and things like that, was from 2018 on. Answering that question is a lesson I learned back in forever ago when I did stand-up comedy. I'm no one you ever heard of. How funny I was is subjective, but another comedian, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm bigger than I was. I was an open micer, but another comedian told me, like, when people ask you how long you've been doing comedy, a lot of people go off and on. They spend a couple of years doing it, they get out of it, they go back in. So technically they could say, oh, I've been doing this for 20 years, when really consistently it'd be like three. You know what I mean? So I take that lesson, a lot of lessons from doing stand-up, into the writing world. Not only was there a lot of writing in stand-up, but there's the performance, the storytelling aspect, the timing, the beats, and things like that, trying to understand what an audience wants and things like that. And real quick, the reason I stopped wasn't because I stunk up the joint every place I went, but I just wasn't getting fulfilled. And to be honest, I was liking my performance and material. I just didn't want to do it anymore. And I decided, and I was seriously thinking at the time, this is years ago now, but I was like, you know what? I really just would rather just be writing. And that's the avenue I took. Happy I did, because now I get to appear on your show.
So clarification. I think I have so many questions that I did
I know.
not
I was like,
expect.
I'm coming out of.
No, this is great. You came out of the gate swinging with stuff to talk about. Now I just have to decide where I want to go with it. But I think first off, I do want to point out that for some reason, writers, we have a tendency to pick the most inopportune times to write. But I think that's a little bit of a testament to how it can work, right? There's a lot of people that think, oh, I'm too busy to write, or but I mean, maybe I think a lot of it comes down to the little bits of time you can wedge in there. So I want to talk a little bit about your graphic design in just a second, but from the comedy perspective. So you mentioned the writing is involved with stand-up comedy, which makes sense, it totally makes sense. So how much did your structure in writing your comedy routines bleed into your structure in preparing for writing a book? Like, are
Well, in
those
my own
pretty
personal,
related?
yeah, in my, when I talk about my personal experience, I'll let the more successful and better comics talk about their careers in comedy. But for me personally, the lessons I took from it, man, there's so much I didn't even realize actually how much from my experience as a performer, I guess, would lend itself in inform the me taking on being an author. So for example, being quick was something. Being quick, adding structure to having not a lot of time. Like you spent many years as an open micer like myself, you go to an open mic night. The one I would go to, my home club, so to speak, their open mic night, they give you 3 minutes, which is not a lot of time if you think about it. But if you're up there on stage, that's an eternity. Now, a lot of places would give like 5 minutes, that's you would normally get 5 minutes. This place happened to be three. And people hear 3 minutes and they're like, what do you even do? By the time you're finished saying your name, you got to get off stage. What are you talking about? Right. So that you learn to fit in as much as you can in those 3 minutes, and they have to make sense, and you have to try what works. Now, it would be sometimes just the most basic of things. You do your premise, your punchline, and a little tag at the end, some little funny bit you can add to the end before you either segue or whatever to your next bit or your next joke, whatever it may be. And the pacing of that and the humor, again, subjective, but the humor of that. And I'm kind of basing what I like to do, I like to just base on, like many people do, like what your real life foibles are and your experiences and just odd things that comes in its own way, a form of storytelling. So a lot of nights when I would do it, I would be, you basically have like your draft, kind of like your draft, and you keep on chipping away, like a just like a manuscript. Except for me, if it was a longer set, I would be able to add in more things. But typically on an open mic night set, when I was like doing 3 minutes, I would have my, I don't know, four or five jokes I wanted to tell. And I knew I was going to tell those, but I wanted to try out the one new one. I would sneak that in the middle. And of course, after every set, you're like, what worked, what didn't work? And that is the main difference, I would say. Well, there's plenty of differences, but the main difference between even just an open mic night, some they let anybody up there, they let me up there plenty of times. So any idiot like me can go up there and just do their little bit and then get off stage, right? So, but the thing about it is, assuming you get a good crowd, you get instant feedback. Now, as authors know, you it's a lonely journey. It can be a lonely journey. Some people have teams and things like that, like a street team or something. Sometimes you're indie authors, you're just like, it's really just you, yourself, and nobody else, right? So, and so you're just like pouring your heart and soul into this manuscript. Yeah, and if you are going to get feedback, you have no idea if someone's going to like it because they could take forever and a day to read the thing. So I will say, I do kind of miss that aspect where it's like, hey, if it bombed, you know immediately. If you have a bit in your manuscript that's like, eh, that one's not so good, kind of harder to dissect that. And the way, it just help structure, you know, even like sentence structure. I'm a stickler, Dan. I'm a stickler when it comes to sentence structure. I'm not saying I'm like some English teacher or something, but you know, I'll just say I've read some books where, you know, I'm like, was there an editor? I don't know. So,
Well,
but
yeah.
you know, and the thing is, like, the book is enjoyable. So that's the one rule of writing, is just to write a book that someone enjoys. And if you enjoy it, you'll let all the typos just go away.
I'm impressed with people with your mindset around sentence structure because I'm generally blind to those things. Because generally, when I'm reading a book, I will get so immersed in the story that most of the time I'm not actually reading. The words are just converted to images, like a movie in my brain. And so I don't even realize I'm reading a lot of the time. So that's one of my biggest problems with editing is I tried, I'm like, no, focus on the sentence, focus on those typos, and then like half three pages, and I'm like, crap, I forgot I was reading. And so that's in any case, you brought up a lot of really good points in there. I'm curious to know, because I've never thought of this association before with comedy writing versus book writing. You mentioned pacing, you mentioned beats. So did that really influence the beats and the pacing of your books? Are they faster paced? Not exactly like a comedy, because that's like really fast, but do you find that your books tend to be a little faster paced because of that?
Man, I wish I was a faster writer in general, but as far as like the actual like content of the story, I will say the main thing that comes to mind is the dialogue between two characters. If I want them, that seems to be, you know, a reader can love it, the reader can hate it, but for me, it's one of my favorite things to do, is to write the dialogue. That's the most fun for me. And every writer is going to be different. Every author is going to be different. Some authors love, I love to describe, you feel like Tolkien, but I'm going to describe a tree for like 5 pages. You know what I mean? That's just what he liked to do or something, you know? So, and so, but for me, I really enjoy the dialogue part. And so as far as faster, that'll come to me a little bit more naturally. And I'll be able to kind of, you know, write out lines a little bit more quickly. And there is a lot of, okay, this character said this, so that's going to set up the, it's basically like, I know I want this character to say this funny line. And not that I write strictly comedy or anything, but it's like, if I want a writer, if I want a character to say this one funny line, now I'm kind of reverse engineering. I'm thinking, how do I get to that line so it makes sense? It's not just out of the blue because I think it's funny. You know what I mean? What is like in the scenario that's gonna like form itself around this one punchline? And that will be what determines, or that determines how a scene is gonna go in some cases. So it's sort of like, I want this premise to work, but in order for my character's punchline to be like, boy, I love jelly donuts or something like that, everything's got to make sense to that, because you can't just be like, I love jelly donuts. Like, who are you talking to? Why did you just say that? It has nothing to do with what's going on. There's a volcano erupting, and you're talking about donuts. You know what I mean? So things have to make sense. That's the basic comprehension. That's what all authors are wanting.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's always a good time to be talking about donuts. So,
I know. So you can
always
tell
a
what's
good
on my
time.
mind.
But that would be on my mind too. But no, I mean, this it does lead me to another question because you mentioned your, I guess, strict, how strict you are about the sentence structure, just about structure in general, because you're a graphic designer. Is that correct? That's what you do. Is that for your full-time work or is that like
It's
a.
my full-time
Okay,
real job.
perfect. Real
And
job.
real job, the thing that actually pays money.
Yeah, right. I got one of those too. So, yeah.
And of course, because I just enjoy doing it, I'm working on side projects all the time myself, at least all the
Nice.
time when I have time. So when, how it relates to each other, like in a design, like I'm designing a logo right now, and for me, I'm like, I want, if there's like a bunch of lines in the logo, I want the lines to line up together. I want the width to be the same where they need to be the same. The length needs to be the same. And things kind of have to make sense because, in a way, every design is sort of like a, this sounds so pretentious, but you're kind of telling a story in the sense that
Sure.
you're expressing a vibe, a mood, what this thing is supposed to represent, what you hope the viewer audience will take away from it. And if I find something, there's something I could either be assigned it or I can come up with something all out of the blue just for fun. If I see an element in the design, and it could be anything, but it's like if there's like a certain shape or a slope or an angle or something like that, I'm like, if I see that here, I kind of want it to be over here too. You know what I mean? Like anything I can see to add some sense of consistency is what I'm looking for. And so that translates into the actual like manuscript with the words in the those words, where if I make a choice to do something, if I choose to spell a word that's accepted in more than one way, like I use the word crime fighter a lot in my superhero book. I've seen it where it's spelled as one word and it's hyphenated. I forget which one is the correct one, but honestly, if somebody reads that, they're gonna know what I'm talking about. And so I'm like, it could be any word, but it's like, or if you decide I'm gonna spell the word gray, gray or grey, both are accepted. You'll know what we're talking about, right? I'm team AY, just I don't, it doesn't matter, but whatever.
It doesn't matter. I write EY. I don't know what it is. I usually use all the British spellings. No idea why. My editors are
It's
always like, you don't
totally,
live there. Why do you do that? I'm like, I don't know. Just do.
it's just, it's like, it's totally acceptable either way. You know what I mean? So, but it's like, whatever you choose, it sounds simple, but it's something I have to remind myself. Whatever you choose, just make sure that's the way it is throughout the entire manuscript, because that would be mildly embarrassing to have your words all over the place. And so it's like when it comes to sentence structure, if I can bore the audience to tears for a second, when it comes to sentence structure, like a character says a line of dialogue, it's more the norm to have the rest of the narration continue right after that line of dialogue. I like to press enter and or return and have a space and start a new paragraph after that. Now, does that matter? Am I crazy? Am I OCD about this? Probably. Does anyone care about this? Probably not. But it all kind of lends itself back to being consistent. And you're probably wondering, you're probably thinking, like, I didn't know I was going to talk about like sentence structure tonight or like paragraphs and things. But hey, you know.
Well, I mean, I assumed it would be part of it because for someone, don't get me wrong, I recognize the importance of structure, and obviously I've edited my books, have editors for my books and everything. But you know, a lot of those things don't come for me until the editing phase. When I'm in my drafting phase, I don't even think about anything. I am just letting the words flow on the page, and I'm like, I'll figure it out later. I'll go
I'm
through and
so in
make
this.
everything consistent later.
See, now you're doing it the right way.
Well, I don't
You
know
know,
if it's
you're
not
doing
the
the
right
correct
way.
way. You're supposed to just write the thing and then edit later. You're not supposed to edit as you go, and I find myself doing that a lot. So
Well,
it's
sometimes it works for people.
you know,
Yeah.
it's the
I mean, that's
enemy of
great.
progress, but yeah.
It works with you. That's great. So this may or may not relate to your story plotting, but do you find yourself plotting things pretty specifically prior to starting the writing because of your interest in structure, or do you discover it as you go?
So for the book on secret identity, I spent a long time in the development and the preparation for that. And I planned it goes through the stages like many books do. It's like at first I was like, I just want to write something because I like writing. And then it turns into sometimes I have this voice in my head whenever I'm working on something, I'll hear myself in my mind saying, you're not going to like me very much because I have this other idea. And I'm thinking, yeah, this could be a series. And like, dang it, I was hoping I could just have a one and done and just be fun and just be done with it. And just like, no, I want this to be a series now. And so I'm doing all this extensive planning and note taking, and I'm not reading a book on structure, I'm listening to an audiobook on structure, where it's like the one of the Save the Cat books is good, is good about that. And just making sure, does my book follow that same structure, you know, the hero's journey and all that business. And so I spent perhaps too long, because I when I started tackling, I wrote a short story in between that, but a novella, because I'm fancy. But when I started writing my current manuscript, it's not like I didn't like just say, well, I'm just going to type away and see what happens. Of course, I had some thought into that, but I had to tell myself, don't spend 5 years planning this novel, please. Can you just start writing something? And so that's been a different experience. It's been a lot of fun because there's like freedom there, and it's kind of scary for me, because I got so. It was sort of there was actually a point writing on Secret Identity. I had so many notes about the world and stuff, and I'm like, I had to like I can't I was like had to like go to myself and be like, when do you think you're going to be ready to actually write one word in the manuscript? I'm like, oh yeah, that part. I was having so much fun developing everything else, and because I like to do the art for it. And so we were talking a little bit before we started recording about how the indie writer doesn't have a lot of time. I've come to the conclusion, and I want to know if you agree with me, if I would say just producing one book, just one, just only one, really truly requires a full-time staff. And typically it's just you doing it, you know what I mean? Like a lot of the times. So like you can edit your own book, you do the writing, and because I like to do the art, and some people do the art for as well, but it's kind of like it's both a point of pride to say I did my own cover, and also cheap labor. It's also because I didn't have to pay myself to do it. So so that's one of the reasons why things take a while, because it can be great, it can be not great. It's all me. It's all me. So,
Indeed.
and I know you know how
Well, I do,
that
except for I don't do my own covers. So, because I have zero graphic
feels.
design skills, that's I'm also colorblind. So, throw that in there. There's no way I'm going to be able to get a book the right color. People would be asking, why is that tree orange? And I'd be like, I don't know. I
That'd
didn't realize it was.
be interesting, though.
But I color things strangely all the time. In fact, just today, I sent a spreadsheet to someone at work with a bunch of data in it, and they're like, "So, what's the significance of the colors?" And I was like, "There is no significance. I just kept incorrectly picking shades of green." So there were like 10 different shades of green when I thought they were the same. So, but that in any case, so in terms of structure, you mentioned that you're particularly passionate and interested in the formatting manuscript, like, because there's a lot of really cool things you can do with the end manuscript, which just add those fun little touches. So, talk a little bit about that and, why you enjoy that aspect of it so much.
A little bit of that I enjoy, a lot of it I enjoy, is that there is the con there the control, you know what I mean? There's but I will say, if I could outsource it, I probably would, but again, it's both pride and also just either not wanting to pay someone or can't pay someone. It's either one of the two. And so, because I had the design experience, I'm using Adobe InDesign to do the formatting. There's a lot of great software programs you can use. That's the one I know, so that's the one I'm using. And man, that has been one learning curve after the other, doing that. And it's a lot of YouTube University, going there and just trying to
Love it.
figure that out as we go. And so, but it does allow me to kind of go in there and go into the weeds, get into the details of my margins and the front matter, the back matter, and all of this business, and expanding the cover to be wraparound instead of just the one single ebook cover. And and you do have fun. You know, it's funny. So as many cool opportunities as you would have to insert and include a bunch of different things into the manuscript, what's funny is, like, for this, I kind of want to keep it as simple as possible, even though it is intended for, like, the younger reader, you know, borderline middle grade, but YA. And I'm like, I kind of don't want to load up the book with a bunch of stuff that doesn't really apply or is not really relevant. You know what I mean? And I'm going through all these other books on my bookshelf, just looking at what they did. Like, what did this other successful person do? You know, what did Suzanne Collins do in The Hunger Games? You know what I mean? Like, who are these people? What did they do? And so I got to where I designed these little logos. So I was like, it'd be kind of cool if I had the character symbol above their name and stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool, you know? And I'm like, okay, so I have the cover, the logos and stuff. And I got to a point where I'm thinking, like, okay, I'm thinking I'm finally ready to send this off to a printer. And then I was like, you know, the character, you're not going to like me very much. That voice comes back. And I'm like, because I feel like I feel like I'm taking forever. But to the average person who has no idea who I am, they're not exactly like, hey, John, when's that book coming out? Print edition. Hello. So I have to kind of remind myself of that and just be like, it'll just kind of come out when it comes out. Because I know it's been years doesn't mean, you know, anyone else knows that. But I'm like, you know, the character does have like a sketchbook and stuff. It'd be kind of cool to see like his drawings. It's really just me drawing it. And I'm like, but how many do I want to include? And it kind of takes me long enough to do anything. And I can feel the stress and the pressure that no one but me is putting on myself. And but I'm like, and my wife's like, you're good at drawing. You should put art in the book. And I want to say, but I'm almost done. I don't want to do
this. Stop tempting me to add more stuff to this book.
But I'm like, yeah. And so, you know, I'm just the perils of being so talented. What can I do? It's such an unbearable.
Such a burden. Absolutely. Such a burden. But no, I love that you mentioned some of the things, because honestly, it's those final touches. Like, you know, books that come to mind, people may roll their eyes, but this is honestly the first book that comes to mind. If you think about Brandon Sanderson's Stormlight Archive books, you know, those kind of insert pages with like sketchbooks from Chalon, or, you know, just little diagrams of shard plates or whatever in the Stormlight Archive. They add such a fun element to the books. Now, I admittedly have never done any of that kind of stuff. Most I've done is chapter header images, kind of like what you said. And that was kind of a willy-nilly decision, because I was like, I doodled one day, had designed this kind of symbolic representation of the magic system in my books. And then each person has a different combination of that magic. And so the combined symbol could be broken up into 7 pieces, and then you can add the elements. They all fit together based on what powers you have. So I added, for that person's chapter perspective, what their power combinations were. And it was fun. You know, it's just
I like it.
Nobody knows about it. People reading the book probably didn't detect that at all. But for me as the author, I was just like, this is very satisfying to me.
It's too much fun.
It is fun.
It's just too much fun, man. Yeah. Adding, you know, personal touches to that and stuff that actually, you know, it does apply to the story. So, you know, and that's one of the things that I was really, really maybe too concerned about is, because, well, one of the things is, I'm just, every now and again, I have a friend who is way more into, she writes romance, so not really applying to my genre, but she's always telling me about this, like, oh, this scandal happened in the author world. And I'm like, I may have heard of them, may not. And I'm reading up about it. And I'm like, Amazon kicked off their book because they had this or that. And I'm like sitting there thinking, this tiny microscopic little author who I'm like, Amazon knows I exist, or my book is on Amazon, but do they know I'm here? You know what I mean? So I feel like such a speck, but I'm hearing all these like horror stories. I'm like, that's not gonna happen to me, is it? So I get probably unreasonably paranoid about like, I'm like, oh man, I don't want to give Amazon or anybody else any excuse, and just to, oh, you put too much picture, you put too many pictures in your store, get out of here. I'm like, no.
Well, I mean, you bring up a really good point, because once again, I have absolutely nothing against traditional publishing. I may traditionally publish someday. I mean, who knows where my career is going to go. But one thing that you do generally have within self-publishing is control over the format of your books, you know, what images, what content you put in there. You can update it kind of on the fly. But leading into your concern, which, there, you know, I would say there's some legitimate concerns around your books being taken down for whatever reason. You know, most really successful independent authors or self-published authors that I've heard and talked to say, what's the word I'm looking for? You have multiple streams of income, right? Meaning, don't put all of your eggs in one basket. There's a lot of people that maybe they've built an entire infrastructure on Kindle Unlimited or only Amazon. And then, well, what happens if your book gets taken down, right? If your one leg, your one stream of income is gone. And so try to, where possible, obviously it means more work, but sell direct or publish to different stores, or, you know, work on your email list, or try different social media platforms, right? You know, the TikTok thing. We're not here to talk about the drama around TikTok. But if TikTok ultimately does go away, anybody who has built their entire platform into TikTok might be scrambling to find something else, right?
Yeah.
And so it just helps to have some backups in case something goes wrong with one
For
of the
sure.
platforms.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that's great advice. And, you know, I feel like such a baby author when I see, you know, I'm going on my Instagram or other social media feeds. You know, I feel like there's so much I'm still learning about the business aspect and their business end. And, you know, like I hear people saying like, oh, you know, this is my third series about this. And I'm like, I have the one and a short story out, you know, and, but, you know, that's one of the things where, I mean, speaking of social media, I mean, as much as we can love it or hate it, but I don't want to say need it, but it's something about, well, I'll say this, what I said about social media before is I would say you'd be dumb not to have it, but you shouldn't rely on it. And because it should just be one of the things you're doing. But at the same time, when you don't have much time, really, your phone becomes the life force of your entire. I mean, I find myself writing on my phone more than my computer.
Interesting.
Because let's say you have a break and at work, you have that extra 10, 15 minutes. You're just like, let me go over my manuscript. Let me open up whatever Word app I like, whether it's Microsoft Word or Google Docs, whatever it may be. You're like, let me just open it up. You tap, 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 you know, just write. And I've gotten so used to it that I kind of like, if I were to go back to just write on a traditional, like regular keyboard setup, I'm like, type of thing, type of just, how does this work again? So, and I know there's a lot of authors who do that, who just like, and I kind of went to that really reluctantly. I was like, oh no, I'm writing my phone, like text all the time. So whatever, you know, it's kind of like the same, sort of the same thing. And so then it comes down to, I know you'll understand this, where it's like, I happen to have 5 minutes. I'm going to just break out the phone, load up the manuscript, boo, boo, boo. And some days, the goal is to write every day, but some days, if I write two words, then I feel good because it's more than zero. You know what I mean? So, like, if I'm at the end of the night exhausted, And let me know if you've ever done this. If you're just exhausted, you're like, oh crap, I didn't touch my manuscript today. So you're like zombified and just blah, 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 blah. And like you wake up the next morning, you read what you wrote. I'm like, I don't think that's going to make it into the final
There have been many times, in fact, I've posted a couple videos to TikTok where I'm reading through an editing phase. And I'm like, what on earth was I even going for? Like mentions of frying pans and grandmas and grass clippings. I'm like, what is happening in this fantasy world? So, yeah, it's, but you know, I think what you highlighted there is something that I think hopefully everybody can take away from. I actually used to write on my phone a lot more in Google Docs, what I used. I hate file sharing. I hate file versions. They drive me insane. I'd rather, you know, update. But yeah, you know, when you have 20 minutes here, 5 minutes there, it's really about retraining your creative mind to be able to slip into action as quickly as possible. Because if you struggle getting into writing sessions, then it might be challenging. But if you can open up your manuscript and it's like, click, oh, that's right, here I am. 5 minutes, you need to tap out a few sentences. All right, next thing, move on. But it's a little bit of something you have to exercise, a muscle you have to exercise.
Yeah,
But
you
it's
definitely
great.
have to retrain your brain, so to speak. But another thing that just keeping up with, so in the research phase, just trying to study the business of writing, which is a whole other, I feel like I need to take 4 years of schooling just to do that. And
Right.
then, and
True.
I'm like, I feel like I need a degree in that. Like every aspect of writing, I feel like I should have like spent as many years as like a doctor. I feel like I need to go to school for that. Okay, you learned about writing. Now you need to learn about marketing. Now you need to learn about the art side. I feel like, yeah, all these fields of study, you kind of have to learn on the, if you don't know one, you got to learn the other one, and you have to do it on the fly. And so my initial research and stuff, I was trying to like study the trends of the market, like what is like right to market, like what is trending right now, you know what I mean, like as if my book is going to be released within like 3 months or something, you know. But so I was like, well, I write clean sci-fi, superhero sci-fi, so I'm like, no one's in there just taking their shirt off for no reason or anything like that. And the thing is, I don't like in my real life, I'm not like a prude. I don't clutch my pearls or anything like that. But I'm also like, when it came to the story I wanted to tell, I just like, I know nothing's really overly sexual. There's no cursing. There's action and violence is tame by comparison to a lot of things. Nothing political. I just kind of wanted just to have just a fun, straight up, pure fun adventure. And I kind of thought that, because all the books I was seeing in the market, like, and I was like, yeah, these are teenagers who are probably going to do things their parents would not approve of, and in their dystopian world or whatever it may be. And here I am with my little book about like they just have fun, I mean, with the coming of age tale about superheroes and stuff. And so, but then I was like, oh, as more I discovered the community, I'm like, oh, there's other people who, other authors who don't like it. In fact, there's a lot of them. So I felt comforted with that, with knowing that, yeah, exactly. So I'm like, okay, cool. There are more people. There's actually quite a few of them. So that's nice. That's nice. So,
Well, I mean, it really comes down to you as the author. You have the power to decide. And that's the one thing I love about, I mean, technically, traditionally published authors do have the power to decide as well. It's just, it might be a little bit tricky. You know, there tends to be a little bit more of a target that you have to hit for agents to pick up your book. Whereas with indie, you know, if you want to write really explicit stuff, you have the ability to do so. If you don't, then you don't have to. And there's an audience for that. And so it's great that there are audiences for everything, and it's just about finding that audience and writing, not necessarily writing to them, but recognizing that you're writing for that audience to some degree. So I think that's awesome. So why great. I mean, there's so many things that I could
I
ask
know.
down
I
that vein. There's, but you know, I love the point that you brought to that.
right. And I got this friend of mine who writes romance. She was like, "Have you ever thought about considered writing? Have you considered like writing like a you can choose a pen name or something, so you like writing like a real spicy book. I'm like, I would probably be so embarrassed if I did that. So I'm like, I think I'm gonna, even if I released it, I'm like, I'm just so embarrassed. But I'm like, you know, it takes me long enough to do one thing. I'm gonna stick to my thing. And you know what's funny is, so this made me think of this, and I want to know if it's the same thing for you. So we're creative people, we're gonna have lots of different interests, you know, and we want to explore different things. And do you ever, I don't know, do you ever feel like, oh man, if I wasn't so passionate about writing, all the other things I could be accomplishing right now with my life, but instead I focus so much brain power on these made-up worlds and things like that. Does that ever enter your brain? Sometimes I think about that. I'm like, what else would I be doing? I don't know. Probably not much.
I have had that thought, but about other things that aren't writing. You know, like, what if I was putting more into my writing? Could I
Exactly. As
make
if you're
something
like,
more out of it? Yeah, rather than, you know, it's exactly the same idea, but it's just like these other hobbies or these other interests, or it's just like, if I wasn't spread so thin, where could I be now with my writing?
like as if every waking moment there's not that thing in the back of your brain that's like, have you written today? Have you like,
No, why not me?
or you get so caught up, like sometimes even talking to like family members, close family members, I'm struggling to think of something to talk about because I'm like, I'm pretty sure they don't want to talk about how I'm in the middle of chapter two of my manuscript and I'm trying to plan for this thing in advance. I'm like, do they? I'm like, oh, so John, how was your day? I'm like, it's fine. Do you want to talk about how I'm like, oh, the character said this on page 23. I want to bring that up later on page 63. You know what I mean? Like these weird little, such minute little details that I'm like, yeah, these people probably don't care about that. So what else happened to you today? I don't know, man.
Definitely am the odd man out in my family as well. There's a lot of things that I do that they are not interested in, and once that's fine. No, it's different interests, different hobbies, it's not a big deal. But yeah, it is very interesting.
Man.
You know, there's it, like you mentioned, you know, earlier during the discussion about how isolating and lonely it can feel to be an author, which is part of the reason I started this podcast, because it's awesome to connect to people who can relate and understand where you've been and what kind of things you're working through. But yeah, it's
I will say real quick, sorry to interrupt, but I will say this is the type of, well, your podcast you have right now is such a podcast I really appreciate because, and I had considered, you know, getting back into the whole podcasting world. I'm like, what I even, what I don't know what I want it to be about. I have some ideas, but I haven't settled on anything. And again, a time issue, but this podcast right here, I really appreciate because this is the type of podcast that I, you know, there's writing podcasts all over the place, but I really like a podcast that focuses more on like the indie author, someone you may not have ever heard of who does have a real life. It's more relatable. And it's like, I like, you know, I enjoy biographies and things like that of someone famous, whoever I happen to find interesting, or if it's like an entertainer specifically, or like a more like a comic or something. They'll be like, oh yeah, I struggled here in a bit, but let's get back to the part where I'm famous. I'm like, I want to hear about your grind that you went through. And you know, some talk about that more than others, but I'm like, yeah, but what did you do week to week? You're trying to grind it out with no sleep. You know what I mean? Staying up to like for me, it was like 12 a.m., 1 a.m., 2 a.m., go work the next day, eight, you have to be there by eight in the morning or whatever it is. And you're just kind of like throughout the entire day. I'm like, I'm so happy I waited so long to perform my jokes in front of two people that were left. So this is the
That's
type
kind
of
of
like
fun.
grind I want to know about. So yeah.
Well, it definitely makes you feel like you're not crazy, because there's thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of authors around the world who are kind of doing the same thing. But you know, it's those, it, not a complaint at all, but it's the ones who are famous that often, you know, we idolize and or compare ourselves to, and it doesn't feel good. It's just like, well, shoot, that person sold 10,000 books this month. Look at my sales page. Yeah, we're not going to talk about that today.
Less said the better.
So, But it's
Yeah.
really setting your own standards for success, but recognizing, hey, you're not alone. There's a
And
lot of hard things.
also just, I kind of figure it's the same thing with lots of different authors. Even if no other living person reads your book, you will probably write it anyway. Let's say you're like, man, if I was stranded on a desert island, I'd probably still be writing these books. Just like, hey, maybe somebody will read it someday. I don't know. Because you got this story in you and you just got to get it out. And frankly, that's frustrating and kind of annoying about doing this. Like, oh man, what else would I be if I didn't have this darn drive to want to tell these stories, you know what I mean? And but that's our shared weird thing that we have, and
Indeed.
there's a community of crazies out there.
Indeed. They're quite a large community too, but well, hey, this has
Yeah.
been an excellent conversation. I would love to keep chatting. We're running a little bit short on time, but before we end up here,
No
I
problem.
definitely want to make sure to ask where can people find more information about your books and your upcoming books.
Sure. The easiest place to go is johnmcbride.com. That's the one-stop shop, of course. And on the socials, many of them, including Instagram, is at johnmcbrideauthor. There are some underscores in there, so watch out for that. So if you Google John McBride, there's not a lot of other John McBrides out there. I think there's like an astronaut or something, some less successful John McBride.
Someone less successful than me, for sure.
Instead of that other John McBride, you don't have to worry about him. Just focus on this guy right here.
Well,
So,
I'll make sure to put the
yeah.
links in the show notes so people will be able to
Of
access that
course, appreciate it.
pretty easily. But you're not the only one. I remember I felt a certain level of pride that now when you search Dan Kenner, there's a doctor,
Yes.
Dan Kenner, who writes medical books, and I have taken over the SEO for Dan
Yes.
Kenner. So he hasn't
Yeah.
written books in years, and I've taken over. So.
Yeah. So you can just. Yeah,
He has a
so you're
doctorate,
just
but
taking
I'm
him.
the first one on Google, so take that, Dan.
So yeah, take that, pal. Yeah, so
But
hey man, I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm excited to be here and really appreciate the opportunity. I had a lot of fun.
all right, thank you, and we look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Of course.
Maybe thought that was helpful and interesting. John is very, very passionate about his structure, and it's very interesting to talk to someone whose mind focuses on different details than my own. I do appreciate structure quite a bit, but I don't thrive on it, and I'm a little bit more forgiving when things perhaps aren't structurally sound from a writing and formatting perspective. But yeah, I hope that you learn something and are encouraged to learn how to structure it yourself. I think that's something that everybody should learn if you're planning on publishing, if you find that it's worth learning the skill. Next week, we'll be talking to Cairo Dean about the necessity of creativity. So we dive into the importance of creativity, not only for her as an author, but just in general as a creative. We talk about filling your creative well, and we do talk a little bit about creating your own cover because she does make her own covers. So that is where a lot of the inspiration came from for me trying to make my own covers. So you want to stick around next week to listen to that. Of course, if you'd like to join me on the podcast, just head to thecasualauthor.com and fill out the form. Let me know who you are, what you're about, what things you're passionate about, and I'd love to have you. Or you can email me at dan@thecasualauthor.com. Would love to have you there as well. If you have any questions, feel free to email me or suggestions for how the podcast might be better. I'm always open to those, so don't hesitate to send me an email. I hope you have a lovely week, and I look forward to talking to you next week.